Welcome to the weekly podcast from the Church of England. This week we find out about an increase in the number of young people accepted for ordination training. We hear from a charity supported by the Archbishop of York, which has just helped its 5,000th client. And as a new report is published highlighting the importance of the roles of chaplains in society, we meet two people who look after theatres and the waterways. But first, figures just released show that the number of young people who are accepted for training for Church of England ministry has reached a 25-year high. The statistics show that a quarter of all people accepted for ordination training are under 30. Last weekend, an event called Step Forward was held at Bishopthorpe in York for young people considering ordination training.
I'm here because I want to explore ordination further and because I wanted to be... I guess to see other people that were at the same stage or especially the same age as me, I think, because it's quite an isolating process, I think, sometimes. So to feel like actually I'm part of something bigger and that there's other people that are on the same journey that I am at the same stage of life, which is really exciting.
From an early age, I've been in the Church of England because my family are all regular worshippers at a church. And I could, from being very young, like, 4 or 5, I felt God was saying to me, Jack, one day I want you to be a priest. And then sort of I went away from the church for a while, thought I knew better than God. And then one day I sort of heard God going, Jack, you don't know better than me. And I'm the King of Kings. And I was like, yeah, you're right. And sort of got back into a relationship with him, realised what Christianity is all about, that it's not just a religion, that it was this relationship, and I really wanted to get involved and tell people about that.
I don't really know why I'm here today, but I know I feel some kind of calling. I don't know what I'm doing, so I thought I'd come and explore and meet some people who are in similar situations. I've been a Christian as long as I can remember, and although I've always questioned my faith, I feel like I have some kind of calling. Like, I know that God has a plan for me and I want to work out where my place in that is.
What it boils down to is doing God's work, living out my Christian calling, which I feel hopefully might be fulfilled in ordained ministry.
Over the last, I guess, probably 10 years of my life, there's been a process of searching for different things and looking for who I am and trying to create an identity for myself. And I think over the last couple of years, it's been a process of understanding that actually I'm called to be the person that God has created me to be, and that actually part of that is someone who loves people and wants to share the love that God has for me with people, and an element of saying actually as a vicar, we're called to love and to share God's love with people in our parish and with the world. And I just feel like that's so exciting and part of who I am and part of who God created me to be. And I think all we can be is the people that God created us to be.
The organiser, David Goodhue, explained more about the event.
What we do in the day is we meet and we worship. We do a range of exercises together designed to help people think, what is God calling me to? And it could be anything. We meet with younger clergy who can share their own experience of what the joys and struggles of Christian ministry are. We learn about the process the Church of England uses to try and test whether somebody does have a call and how they might train for ordained ministry. And I would stress it's very open-ended. It's not designed to produce any particular outcome, but help people hear more clearly God's call on their lives.
There were representatives from 23 dioceses at the event. David Goodhue says regardless of what the young people decide, it's good for them to meet other like-minded people.
We have about half men, half women from all the traditions of the church and at all different places. Some know very firmly in their hearts that they feel this call. Others have never told a soul. I love the encounter once where I was chatting to a student from Durham who said to me, "Don't tell my mum I'm here." And it was like she'd never told a soul that this had been on her heart.
A report out this week looks at chaplaincy services and asks whether it could be the future of religion in the UK. The report by FEOS, called A Very Modern Ministry, examines the new settings chaplains can be found in and includes figures of all faiths and none. I spoke to two chaplains who are both ordained in the Church of England. Mark Chester looks after waterways.
One of the things that I've been aware of in the last 28 years that I've been in parish ministry is that there's a great deal of difficulty engaging with people who are unchurched. Many people outside the church have a particular view of what the church is, which is normally inaccurate, but actually getting them across the doorway to engage with the wonderful communities which exist there is really quite difficult. So it's a case really of going to where they are in the third place, so to speak. That's not where they work or where they live, but actually where they really want to be. But going to that third place and meeting them in their world really, and engaging with them there.
Practically speaking, how easy is it to get to people on the waterways? I know boats don't go very fast, but even so, it doesn't feel like it's sort of a terribly easy way to get to people.
Well, it's certainly a roving community, but obviously they can't get that far away because there's only about 15 feet across. But what tends to happen is around the lock gates and things, they're obviously enforced stops. So that you're able to meet quite a lot of people who are travelling there. But just walking along the towpaths, there are a very large number of people, many thousands of people, who live on the waterways permanently. And when the weather's nice, they sit outside because they don't have gardens, they sit outside in public areas. And you can just engage with them as you go along. And so it's actually, I'm told, somewhat easier than might first be thought.
What reaction do you get when you talk to people?
Well, the reaction that I've had in my enormous experience of just over a week is that people are very warm and friendly and intrigued by what the waterways chaplain is. I know that's something which isn't limited to people on the waterways, something which is shared by some people in the church as well. But there is a genuine fascination that Christians care enough to go out and see who needs on the waterways. The advantage of being a chaplain, with having waterways chaplain or any other form of chaplaincy written on you, is that people recognise you're a public figure and see what you're doing. And generally, it is recognised it's a good thing what you're doing. And so that really puts the church in a relevant context.
Ed Oldsworth-Peter has been a chaplain to theatres in the West End of London.
I have loved theatre from an early age. My wife is a West End performer. And my family are all quite creative. There's opera singers and various performers. So I've always loved the theatre, but also as an ordained minister, really passionate about helping and supporting people in their secular roles, in their secular work. So it seemed a natural choice to connect the theatre with ministry in that way.
What was it like when you started? How did you find it?
To start with, it was spending time at stage door, saying hello to people, getting known by people, and then gradually working with the theatres to then work in different departments to connect with people, to help them and support them in what they were doing. Mostly in the West End, shows are about a year-long contract, which we renewed every year. So you might be there for a year on one show, and each show has a different company manager who's in charge of backstage, in charge of the cast, and will take care of the technical crew, stage management. So it's working with the company manager to make sure they're happy for you to be there. And if they are, it's then about spending time before a show starts, bumping into people, say hello, really spending time with people, listening to their stories, seeing if there's ways that we can support and help them, encourage them, if there's any issues they have, just to be a listening ear, really, in that sense.
And how were you received by the workers there?
Sometimes it's mixed. Sometimes people don't understand why there might be a vicar in the theatre, but I found very much that by respecting their space, so actually we very much feel as chaplains that we're invited into a theatre community, it's not our right to be there, and taking that view, I think people can see that actually you're not going to judge them, you're not going to force something on them, you're simply there as an impartial, non-judgmental listening ear. So I think some people took a while to understand that, but I found in my experience that in time, as people did, I had some wonderful conversations with people and helped someone who was having a very difficult relationship issue. At one point, I took a funeral for someone who was working in box office. I know other colleagues of mine in other theatres have taken weddings for people who have been in the theatre there. So you kind of can cross all sorts of walks of life and help people in all sorts of their journeys throughout different points in their life.
And if you want to find out more about the report, it's on the Theos website. The charity Acts 435, whose patron is the Archbishop of York, is celebrating helping its 5,000th client. The online charity puts people who want to give in touch with people who are in need. The charity looks to churches to become involved, although anyone can donate. Jenny Herrera is the executive director of the charity. She explained more about what they do.
It works through local churches and charities. They're the ones that meet with the people in need, post the request onto the website, and then donors choose which request they want to support.
What sort of request do you get?
We have a range of basic necessities, really. Things like help with food, help with clothing, people who maybe have fled domestic violence and they're just wearing the clothes that they're stood in is a good example. But then we also have quite a few white goods, so someone's cooker breaks and they just haven't got the money to replace it. From a bed, people who are just sleeping on the floor, the mattress is broken, or a child coming out of a cot and needs a bed. So a real mixture of items.
And how do you know that the money actually goes to the people that are asking for it, or on what they're asking for?
The way that we're set up, because we're run through local churches, we are placing our trust in them because they actually know the people in their community, they know the people who are in genuine need, and we then advise them as well that if they're not sure, then they should go and accompany the person and buy the item for them or buy it for them online. But we are really placing our trust in the fact that they know these people, and they know a lot of people actually will only ask for help when it really is desperate, and so they know that the money will go there and will ensure that it does.
Now, getting to 5,000 clients must be sort of bittersweet, because it's great you're helping so many people, but then again, there are so many people who need help. How does it feel?
Yeah, it is indeed. It's sort of great to get to that milestone when I think in the beginning, trying to get churches to get involved and post requests and sort of trying to get the word out to donors to give. So it's wonderful to see that that has now worked to such an extent that we've helped 5,000 people. But as you say, what a dreadful state. Before I came to work for Acts 45, I was working in the developing world, and I didn't really think of poverty in the UK. And when I came back to the UK to kind of realise how much need there is here in this country is quite upsetting, really.
Is it difficult to find people who want to give money to help, particularly in the times we're in at the moment?
Do you know, it's not, and I think it's because with Acts 435, a donor knows that 100% of what they give will go to the need. So, you know, if John in Liverpool is in need of a cooker and needs £80, if someone gives £80 or if four different people give £20, that money will go in its entirety to buy that cooker. And I think that direct connection, people really, really love that. And also the churches can post a thank you message back to the person saying, John is delighted, he can now cook meals for his family because he's got a cooker. And it's just that direct link that donors really like. They want to know that their money, as you say, in times when people have less to give, they want to know that it has really made a difference.
And if you're interested in getting involved, the charity's website is www.acts435.org.uk. That's it for this week's podcast. Next week, I'll be finding out how the Wash Day campaign is going. And don't forget, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, and each episode will be automatically uploaded as it's released. I'm Gillian Moody. Thanks for listening.